This is an iHeart podcast.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out. You know the first thing they tell you when you get to boot camp? Long time ago, many, many pounds ago, I showed up at Marine Corps boot camp, and you know one of the first things they tell you? I mean, yeah, there's a lot of screaming and threats on your life and little things like that, but one of the things they do is they take away your name. You're not allowed to refer to yourself by your name. You're just allowed to refer to yourself. You're not even allowed to say me. You're allowed to say this recruit. You don't even have a name anymore. They haul you all in. I know you've seen the movies. They sit you down and they buzz off all your head right away. By the way, quick note, if you're one of these guys who's about to join, do not think you're going to be slick and shave your head ahead of time to avoid the very painful shaving they give you. They'll still do it and it'll only be worse. But why would you do that? Shave heads. Take away people's names. Make everybody dress the same. Well, why would you do something like that? I'm a unique individual, right? You're a unique person. Why would they do something like that? Because they're trying to mold you into something else, into something they want you to be. And they know. They know they've done this for decades and decades and decades. I mean, militaries have done this for thousands of years. They know. They can't properly mold you into what they want you to be until they totally destroy what you were. It's all part of the process. They must destroy what you were. You are nothing. You're a blank slate, so then we can make you into what we want. That's the thinking, right? You need to understand that that concept isn't unique to the United States military. And you need to understand the attack on America's institutions you see from the left today. Now, they mainly use racism or sexism today, but all the attacks you see on America's system today, all of our cultural institutions, they're all intentional. They're all intentional. It is, yeah, it's a little ways past the Civil War. Why do you think people are acting so upset about Civil War statues and military base names? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, it's easy to sit and say, well, a bunch of whiny sissies were affected by something that never involved them. I mean, yeah, that's somewhat true of some of them, sure, but have you ever sat and thought about why? What is the point of actually doing stuff like that? And of course, they didn't stop at Civil War. Thomas Jefferson had to go. Abraham Lincoln had to go. They'll all have to go eventually. Why? Is it because they're all a bunch of whiny, soft babies? No. I actually wish that was the case. The reason these people all have to go, the monuments have to go, the names have to go, is because they have to destroy who you are so they can remake you. They don't want you to be an individual, and they certainly don't want you to be free. The left has done this every country where they've ever gained power. They want you to realize you're no longer a God-made soul, an individual human being, a unique person. You are simply part of the collective. You're part of their system now, and your job is to be what all the other good little commie citizens have been, and that is a good little commie robot who does what you're told, goes where you're told, doesn't ask why. You simply serve the machine. And they can never get free Americans to go completely that way until they destroy what you were. That's why they do it. And the most amazing thing about it is they found something that really, really grinds at Americans, and they exploited it for their own good. One of the biggest things they use out there, I know you see it all the time now, racism, race, civil rights. Why did they say that? It's not because they actually care about civil rights or racists or racism or any of that other stuff. It's not it. They say that because they were always going to probe until they found out what actually gets to you, constantly probing for weak spots. You can scream a million things at Americans and they'll shrug it off, but Americans, by their general nature, don't want to be racist. You call somebody a racist, you call somebody something they're not, there's this instinctual need inside to defend yourself against that, prove that you're not. Well, I'm not racist. I'm not racist. I have a black friend. You know, people say lame stuff like that all the time. My best buddy's Mexican. What? It sounds lame because it is lame. But what you need to know is people feel the need to do that to prove the opposite of what they're being accused of. And the left saw that weakness. That's why I rail against Republicans who caved that all the time. Now, the left saw you defend yourself. They saw Republicans defend themselves so lamely like that. No one's done more for black people. And they said, oh, well, that's what gets to them. We must keep it up. The same as a younger brother trying to find a million different ways to get to his older brother who picks on him all the time. And finally finds that if he messes with his toothbrush, that's what makes him freak out. They're always probing you to see what gets to you. And they know racism is what gets to you. And they are now using it to accomplish what they want, to destroy our past, to make the next generation and this generation think America is an ugly, trash, gutter trash society. We need to wipe out history. Why would we wipe it out, remember? So then they can remake it. So they can remold all of society, so they can remold you and me and your kids and my kids into good little commie citizens who will just shut up and do what they're told. Just be part of the machine. That's why they do it. And that's why it's spread everywhere, because they know that this is effective. We have to talk about this tonight, and we have to make sure it stops being effective for them. From top to bottom, they're all using the same language. Here's Joe Biden.
The fact of the matter is, there is institutional racism in America. And we have always said, we've never lived up to it, that we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women are created equal. But guess what? We have never, ever lived up to it. But we've always constantly been moving the needle further and further to inclusion, not exclusion. This is the first president to come along and says, that's the end of that. We're not going to do that anymore. We have to provide for economic opportunity, better education, better health care, better access to schooling, better access to opportunity to borrow money to start businesses. All the things we can do, and I've laid out a clear plan as to how to do those things, just to give people a shot. It's about accumulating the ability to have wealth as well as it is to be free from violence.
We have to provide, we have to do this, we have to do, we've never made it, don't you realize? You and I have never done it. We've never lived up to it, ever. It's a dark, dark, ugly country. Only allowing them to remake it can right all the wrongs of the past. Elizabeth Warren said this.
You have to own up to the facts. And it's important to own up to the facts about how race has totally permeated our criminal justice system. You know, for the exact same crime, study after study now shows that African Americans are more likely than whites to be detained, to be arrested, to be taken to trial, to be wrongfully convicted, and to receive harsher sentences. We need to rework our criminal justice system from the very front end on what we make illegal, all the the way through the system and how we help people come back into the community. But we cannot just say that criminal justice is the only time we want to talk about race specifically. We need to start having race-conscious laws. We need race-conscious laws in education, in employment, in entrepreneurship, to make this country a country of opportunity for everyone, no matter the color of their skin.
Race-conscious laws. That sound like equality to you? That sounds like institutional racism to me. Bernie Sanders had this to say.
We have a racist society from top to bottom, impacting healthcare, housing, criminal justice, education, you name it. And clearly this is an issue that must be dealt with. But in terms of criminal justice, what we have got to do is understand the system is broken, is racist. We invest in our young people in jobs and education, not more jails and incarceration. We end the war on drugs, which has disproportionately impacted African Americans, Latinos, and Native Americans. We end private prisons and detention centers in America.
That sound like an America you want to live in? And I know what you're thinking, Jesse, oh, come on, that's just that's a Democratic primary candidate. Everybody doesn't think like that. You realize your FBI has to give classes on Islamic terrorism without saying the words Israel, Islam, right, or Muslim? You realize that? You realize this pervasive thinking has wormed its way through every cultural institution in this country, trying to destroy you, trying to put down America? This is General Richard Clark of U.S. Special Operations Command. Quote, diversity and inclusion requires action. It requires decisions, and it requires leaders that must put themselves out there and must make purposeful decisions, end quote. Diversity and inclusion. That's what the commander of U.S. Special Forces is saying. All this may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We better get it fixed. We got a great, great show for you tonight. We got Sarah Gonzalez coming up next. We'll be back. Joining me now with the news and why it matters on The Blaze, Sarah Gonzalez. Sarah, you see people, it's been obviously a hot thing for, especially over the past couple years, but it's been something that Les been doing for 10, 15 years, tearing down statues, renaming bases. And it's not like it's limited to one thing or the other. They just changed the name of an Abraham Lincoln High School. Why do they do it? Is it an intentional destruction of history? Do they really believe it accomplishes something? I'm trying to understand the mentality.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to the people at the top that are behind all of this, I think that absolutely it's intentional. When you're talking about revising history, you're talking about tearing down statues, especially as you mentioned, you know, you're talking about people who, if any of these, the people who are actually tearing down the statues would learn anything about history, they would understand that some of these people that they are claiming are so bad that we have to forget them actually were on the same side. But it starts with the people at the top who know what they're doing, and then it trickles down to a bunch of what I like to call useful idiots. So do I think that the people who are on the ground, the everyday people, the Antifa people, the Black Lives Matter people, all of these socialist agenda organizations, do I think that the people on the ground actually know what's going on and this is intentional? Absolutely not. They're simply too stupid to understand. They're being used by a bunch of devious people who have controlled education for a very long time, and they've known what they're doing, and they intentionally omit all of this history when they teach our children. They indoctrinate them, and then they use them to their own advantage. And I think that's what we're seeing play out right now.
Does the right understand it? I have my doubts, sir. I have to tell you, I have my doubts. I saw plenty of GOP senators proposing, you know, Juneteenth bills and all this other crap. And look, even if you think Juneteenth should be a national holiday, you don't do it while Black Lives Matter has a gun to your head. Does the right understand it?
No, unfortunately, I don't think they do. I still don't think that the right has understood what Andrew Breitbart so poignantly said, which was politics is downstream from culture. I think that they still, unfortunately, have not understood that because they let culture manipulate politics. And that's what we're seeing bleed through. We're seeing the right cave to them, perpetually cave to them. We're also seeing the right continue to send their children to these indoctrination camps, to these schools. I mean, could you imagine paying an absurd amount of money to send your child to get indoctrinated against all of these things that you don't believe in? So it boggles the mind. And I think that until we start with our dollars, it has to start with us. It has to start grassroots. It has to start with the people saying, I'm not going to send my kids to these indoctrination camps. And then I think hopefully then lawmakers will finally understand that they cannot continue to stand for this. They cannot continue to cave to this. And they cannot continue to allow the left to perpetually create all of these culture shifts and just go along with it as if this is how it's always been and this is how it's always supposed to be. I think that it comes down to a lack of spine, really, when you're talking about the GOP.
Sarah, tell me, how do you personally spend your dollars when it comes to culture war stuff? I've been more awake to this now recently than I ever have been before, trying the best I can not to fund people who hate me. These corporations come out with these absurd political stances. I try to take my dollars elsewhere, but I can't live in a bubble. And look, what am I supposed to say? My wife will still drive through Starbucks like every other middle-aged white woman. What am I supposed to do? How do I handle that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think it's going to take the majority of us just standing up and saying enough is enough. I think a great example of that is when you're talking about the NFL. I know you and I have talked about sports for a long time now and how they're indoctrinating everyone in sports. We can't just go to sports for an escape now. We have to constantly hear about this culture war in the only escape that we had left in 2020. And I think that that's another example. We have to stop giving our dollars to these sports organizations. We have to stop buying the jerseys. We have to stop, I mean, they're stopping us from going to the games. But once they allow us to go to the games, we have to stop going to the games. And I think that, sadly, it really is going to take all of us standing up and saying enough. I mean, unfortunately, my money still goes to the public schools in my area, the school district, but I pulled my kid from school and I am now homeschooling him because I intend to practice what I preach, which is I am not going to let the left indoctrinate my children. I'm not going to do it. And I think that when enough of us do it, we really will have a case. There is power in numbers, and we can stand up and say, you cannot continue to take our money when you're not doing our children any service.
What do you teach your kid about the wars between America and Mexico?
I teach them the truth, Jesse. I teach them the truth. I give them an accurate depiction of what history was, because how can we learn from history if we don't know it? It's maddening.
I just wanted to know. I just wanted to know how you people teach that. It's none of my business. All right, we're moving on here. What do you do with entertainment for your kids? And I'm sorry to pep you about this, but I get these emails all the time about my kids. What movie do you go to? I want to go to the new Avengers movie as much as the next guy. My boys live for that stuff. But these people are insane. And you're still getting waterboarded with all this crap. How do you handle that? Do you go? Do you abstain? Do you read books like a nerd?
We read books like a nerd, I'm sorry to say, Jesse. And we do abstain. We do. I use a specific app that I look up every single TV show that my child watches. I look up every movie that he's considering wanting to go to. And I look up the books, too. I look up the computer games. I look up everything. That information is available to us, and it can tell us if something like that is going to, you know, subtly or not so subtly indoctrinate our children. And I live and die by that, by those rules, because I I cannot tell you how sad I would be if all of this teaching that I'm actually doing to my child, I'm trying to ingrain all of these values in him. I mean, how frustrating would it be if you let the TV become your babysitter and then all of a sudden all of the instilling of values that you've done is just for nothing? So, I mean, I do take the time to do it, and I'm sure my kid's gonna hate me for it when he becomes 13, 14, 15 years old, but for now he just doesn't have a choice and I'm just gonna take advantage of that.
I fully support you in that. All right. What does a Joe Biden presidency mean? Which looks like that's what we're going to have now. What does it mean for the culture war? Can they actually advance it when they take office? Or is it much more? I've always argued it's much more than the office of the presidency. I mean, you can argue we didn't make many cultural gains under President Donald Trump. I'm not blaming that on him. I just don't think the president has the power to get the gains done that we need.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say that, you know, as long as we can hold our own in Congress, we might have a shot at not advancing that. However, the left is historically and, you know, currently very, very good at their messaging. And that's where we're losing and they are winning. They are so good at their messaging that, you know, President Trump may have been in office, but all we're hearing about is Black Lives Matter. And just listen to the phrase, Black Lives Matter. How can you possibly disagree with that? And so they create these messaging phrases. They create these catchphrases that they use as the names, the titles of their organizations. And I think that you will still see Joe Biden, even though he is president. And by the way, we all know that Joe Biden is just a tool to be used by the more radical left. He will go along with whatever. I mean, I'm not even convinced that he's fully alive right now. So obviously he is going to go along with whatever the puppet masters are going to tell him to do. But more importantly, we just can't seem to overcome their messaging. And I think that is where we are going to continue to lose, no matter who's in Congress, no matter who is in the office of the presidency, because we cannot compete with their messaging. And again, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to the left is willing to play unfairly, right? The left is willing to fight the battle that needs to be fought. And the right is always worried about playing fair. And I think that that's where we are seeing the culture war shift, and we are seeing the left continue to win. And I think they will when Joe Biden becomes president as well.
Sarah Gonzalez, The News and Why It Matters. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
It's a great point. Fairness. You like to think that way because you and I have watched these movies, right? The good guy always wins. They do things the right way. It's not how it works in real life. All right, we got more. Joining me now from RedNation.com, LibertyNation.com, and co-host of the Red and Black Show, Jeff Charles. Jeff, talking tonight about the culture war in the United States of America, not just an oddly, you know, just a anything about it either. We're talking about specifically the historical part of it. Why the left, why they're always going after the history books, why they're going after a monument here. You can't have Thomas Jefferson's name on a school now. They're tearing down Abraham Lincoln's name off a school now. And I think it's confused a lot of people on the right what they're trying to do. Explain it in your own words. What are they trying to do? Why?
So here's where the far left, this is the way that they deceive people, and they're very clever with the way they do it. They might take an issue or a subject that might have and they might have like a modicum of truth to it, but the problem is that the far left will just take it to such extreme levels that it kind of obfuscates the entire issue. But realistically, the thing is, in order to enact their agenda, in order to fundamentally transform the United States of America, which sounds familiar, they have to get us to dislike the country. No, not just dislike, they have to get us to hate America. So one of the ways that they're doing this is by taking certain parts of our history and casting it in an entirely negative light. Now, nobody denies that this country has done some wrong things throughout its history. I mean, that's clear. There are a lot of evil that has happened. However, there's also a lot of good that has happened in the United States of America as well. And the United States has tried to do what it can to kind of rectify the wrongs that it has done in the past. But by taking figures like Abraham Lincoln or Thomas Jefferson or in other such individuals and trying to focus only on some of their negative aspects, they're trying to downplay the good that these people did, because the good that these people did is part of the foundational fabric of this nation that they are trying to destroy so that they can rebuild it in their own image.
Jeff, what's the right thing for a nation to teach its students about their history? I know Japan has struggled with this a lot. They're just, you know, one example of they really sugarcoat all of it. I mean, they're so intent on pushing a national love on their students. They'll sugarcoat over some of the stuff that happened in World War II and things like that. Now, you can say that's right or wrong. A lot of people will say that's wrong. I think I'd rather err that way than have what we have now. I don't think we certainly do it right. What is the right balance there? What do you teach?
You know, I've actually been thinking about a lot of this. I mean, we have the 1619 Project from the New York Times, and we know what the agenda was with that. And then we also have what's been thrown around on the right now, the 1776 Project. I'm not really a fan of either of those. Now, I will concede that with the 1776 Project, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet. But to me, it just sounds like another form of revisionist history. What I think we should do, the 1619 Project has an agenda. There are a lot of things that are wrong with it, but there are a lot of things that it got right about our history. The 1776 Project, I'm sure that it'll be the same thing. I say take both projects and take the actual accurate history from both and put them together, and now we have American history. We have the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that we should never forget the things that went wrong in this country, because you know how the saying goes, we're doomed to repeat it. However, there are a lot of things that America got right and gets right. And if we want to continue, forward in this experiment in liberty, we have to acknowledge what the country has done right. So I say we do both without agenda, without politicization, just the cold, hard facts. I think America still turns out looking pretty good, especially when compared to other countries.
No question about that. How do we get to the cold, hard facts? I've had this thought before. You and I've never had this conversation, but history books are a funny thing. I mean, even old stuff that's written long ago. I'm not talking about something some lefty manipulated today. I mean, stuff written long time ago. You still only have the perspective of the man writing it down. How do we even parse through what is right and what is wrong? What is that? You know, undoubtedly, you and I know a fact about history that's not a fact at all. It's some historical writer got it all wrong and everyone copied him. How do we parse through that?
Yeah, and that's tough. I mean, and I'm not a historian, so I'm not familiar with how to research these things. But what I would say, and I don't know if this is even possible, but what I would say is take politics out of it. Take politics and agenda out of it as much as possible. Have as many people looking into this stuff and verifying facts that may be in question. Maybe they really did happen, but we need people who are willing to look at this without a political agenda. I think it's politics that muddies the waters here. It's when people have agendas. When we have people whose agenda is just the truth, no matter what it looks like, that's when we can actually get to what's accurate and what's not.
Jeff, Joe Biden. Obama moved this whole anti-America concept really, really quickly because of how he stocked the bureaucracy when he was in. To his credit, he was smart enough to do so. He packed the federal government full of a bunch of anti-American academics, and it's down to our military now. It's bleeding everywhere. Is Joe Biden going to be that same kind of thing? I don't want to automatically assign everything Obama did to Joe Biden. Is it going to be better? Is it going to be worse?
Well, I mean, you don't have to assign what Obama did to Biden, because Biden is going to do the same thing, but he's going to do it the way Biden will do it. So, yeah, he's not Obama. He's Biden.
Great.
But they have the same perspective. So I expect Biden to do the exact same thing, but he'll just do it in a way that only he can. Now, that's already bad enough, but imagine what happens when Kamala Harris takes over, because I still believe that Biden's not going to serve his full term. imagine what will happen when Kamala Harris is around. Like that. That's why on the right, we have to make sure that we are messaging correctly and that we are doing what we need to do to set us up to have power in 2022 and in 2024.
Tell me, what's this rift between Biden and Obama? I've never been able to figure it out. I've asked 1,000 people about it. There's clearly something there. I mean, Biden was Obama's VP for 8 years. I realize, presidents and VPs are not historically always best buddies, but that's a long time, VP. And then Biden jumps in this race against 9,000 other candidates. Obama risks no political capital endorsing his vice president because he's his vice president. It's an easy out. And he doesn't. He doesn't do anything until Biden's the only one there. Is there some rift I don't know about that never got out?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've actually kind of wondered that myself. Like, why didn't Obama come out in full support of him earlier on? I mean, his voice is still important. And I'm not sure. I mean, and it seems like I've seen in some instances Biden kind of distancing from things that happened under the Obama administration, especially when it like came to immigration and other stuff. He wants to have a more open border stance than before. Now, some of this, I think, is just politics and that Biden really, he's being pragmatic here. But on Biden's part, I can see that he doesn't want to be known as Obama's vice president. He wants to stand on his own, which anybody can understand that, right? But I think that's what's going on. And I think that's why Biden is trying to put a line of differentiation between himself and between the Obama administration.
Kamala Harris, you brought her up. We're going to talk about her real quick. What's her history on all this culture, trashing of culture stuff? Not just Democratic primary rhetoric, where every single one of them were out there dancing naked in the streets with the torch in their hands, but does she have some actual bad record on this? Every other part of her record sucks, so I'm assuming she does, but does she actually have a bad record on this?
You mean as far as history and the culture goes, or?
Oh, yes.
Honestly, I haven't seen that she has really engaged with the culture much at all in the past. I mean, she has been doing it more over the past year when she's been running for president, but she's never really been a part of the culture like that. Not like an Obama was or like Trump is, and or even to a certain extent Biden. So she's almost, I don't want to use the word blank slate, because I mean, as far as what the culture does know about her, a lot of them don't like it as far as her record as a prosecutor. But I mean, she's a dyed in the wool far left progressive. I mean, and that's been shown by her voting record, about her positions. And I do understand that she's also a pragmatist, so she will kind of stick her finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing, and she's pragmatic in that way. But at her core, based on her voting, she is a far left progressive. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, because she hasn't really been that deep in the culture before. But I think she's going to be stepping that up over the next couple of years, because she knows that she will need it if she's going to actually be the president of the United States.
Jeff Charles, thank you, my man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, we shall return. Joining me now, as she often does, Dr. Nan Haworth. She is currently with the Independent Women's Forum, former Congresswoman. Nan, let's focus on the doctor part first. We're talking about the culture wars tonight and how they go after our history as a country, how they've gone after academia specifically. And there have been a lot of people on the right waking up in the past few years to the field of medicine and what's happened there and why it's happening. Why is the field of medicine drifting left like everything else?
I think for a few reasons, Jesse. One is that in this country, especially since the institution of Obamacare in 2010, medicine, and before that, of course, Medicare certainly started us on that slope, Medicare and Medicaid, but medicine has become a subsidiary. Healthcare has become a subsidiary of the federal government. So physicians have become dependent on government for their livelihoods. Healthcare institutions certainly have. And that tends then to dispose them to accept that situation, which puts them ever more on the left. So that's one phenomenon. The other, of course, is that physicians are, we are in an academic specialty. The academy has become dominated by a social justice orientation in what I certainly passionately consider to be the wrong way, this collectivist, government heavy, socialist sort of mindset. And of course, along with that, unfortunately false equivalence of identitarian, quote, diversity that has come to take precedence, especially in academic settings at institutions across the country, has come to take precedence over what one would hope and certainly largely prevailed when I was in pre-med and then medical school and then training, which was a much more meritocratic point of view. And diversity is embraced, of course, as a matter of not withholding opportunity from anyone. But now it has become an identitarian, check the box. Do we have our ratios right? Do we have our list taken care of? And that certainly can threaten the quality of patient care because that becomes the preoccupation.
Is it affecting the quality of patient care? I mean, because we don't see it. I mean, there's still an inherent respect built in for the title of doctor, for doctors. I mean, sure. There should be. You people went to 9,000 years of medical school. But is there a real lowering of the quality of medical care overall? I know there are still 1,000 good doctors. I'm sure there's still 1,000 crappy ones. Overall, right. Is the quality going down?
That's a great question. Here is the concern that I have. You're quite right, Jesse, that it doesn't necessarily have to reduce the quality of care, although certainly any time, and this is part of it, any time we start, part of the phenomenon I just described, start changing standards as opposed to, the standard should always be you must master a body of knowledge. You must convince us that you are capable of rendering care according to the best evidence using superb judgment. And you're quite right, Jesse, there is a spectrum. But, obviously, as long as folks fall in an acceptable part of the spectrum, that's fine. But if you look at what happened this year during the COVID pandemic, it was very hard to miss that the practice of medicine and the administration of healthcare was materially affected, and I would say impaired, by political and ideological considerations. And I'll give you just one example of that. This has been definitely a moving target and a very rapidly cascading set of data and experiences. Everybody is learning. Everybody's going to make mistakes. And certainly everybody has made mistakes or has certainly changed their minds about best practices. It's evolving. But nonetheless, hydroxychloroquine, prescriber freedom to use hydroxychloroquine for patients. It's a simple concept. Hydroxychloroquine has been around forever. No, it hasn't been used for a viral illness, but there certainly was enough evidence to suggest that when used early in the course, it might be reasonable to conclude that prescribers should be able at discretion to prescribe it for their patients. That access was shut off, and it was shut off primarily on ideological grounds. That should trouble us all. And why on ideological grounds? Because Trump. Because President Trump, whom the left abhors and despises, and of course, to the extent that the left influences medicine and public health, and indeed science, that was probably the primary driver for the skepticism and the institutionalized skepticism, some of which was retracted. The Lancet and the New England Journal both retracted negative papers about hydroxychloroquine, but I think that was driven by hatred for Trump. So it was political, and that materially affected the quality of care and may indeed have cost lives. So that's what the kind of consequences we could see.
sorry to interrupt you, but describe shut off. I'm not a doctor. I don't know how this works. You're the doctor. Can't you just prescribe what you want? Is there some governing body who decides you can't prescribe something? Is this insurance? What do you mean shut off?
Well, there are various means. Yes, one way is that insurers can refuse to pay for an intervention. If they can refuse to reimburse for something that they of which they disapprove if they think it's not effective. But what I'm referring to is on the state by it's a state by state phenomenon in the United States, although the FDA can certainly issue authorizations and did indeed issue an emergency use authorization for hydroxychloroquine. Which in a sense was gilding the lily, but it was a way of saying, yeah, you know, we think this might be useful in certain settings. But states are the ones that can refuse, that can inform pharmacies that they are not to fill prescriptions for patients whose physicians have prescribed hydroxychloroquine unless it is for certain diagnoses. And in the outpatient setting, most states of the country, 44 states last I counted, or saw the count, were refusing prescriber access on an outpatient basis to hydroxychloroquine. That's just wrong.
44 states? I know what people are saying right now. They're saying the same thing I'm saying. Well, the Democrats aren't in control of 44 states. How did 44 states do this?
Well, you know, it's certainly in blue states, there has been more of that, obviously, hierarchical authoritarian bent. But look, certainly there have been red state governors like Governor Hogan and Governor DeWine in Ohio, who have tended to be, more aligned with the precautionary side. In fairness, I'm not sure that those two states have restricted hydroxychloroquine. But yes, clearly it's not just blue states that have done this.
I thought it was bad on the history end, Nan. What's bothered me is they've infected everything, and that's what leftists do anyway. They're in our FBI, they're in the Cub Scouts, they're in the military, they're in medicine, they're in churches. They just have used this idea of the culture war, of destroying our history, of changing how we think about things, and they've infected every single part of our society.
Yes, well, you know, Jesse, what they take advantage of is our laudable impulse, especially as Americans, because we were founded as a nation that aspired always to greater things, and that aspired to shared opportunity and prosperity, and called upon the best that was within every citizen. That's the only way a great democratic republic works. And obviously we had our serious problems and flaws and challenges to overcome, but that's been the drive. So what the left has done has, they've co-opted that beneficence, that aspiration, and they have converted it into, they've perverted it into something coercive. You know, now they say, and yes, you're right, all of these institutions, including mainstream Protestantism, I'm a Lutheran, you know, I've watched my church swing that way too. Now they cast the achievement of social justice as literally depending on the government imposing now the term of art is equity upon all of us. You know, it must be forced. And that is something that just completely overturns the marvelous libertarian basis on which our society was formed 200 some years ago.
Nan, you are the best. Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate you.
And you. Merry Christmas, Jesse. Thank
you. Merry Christmas. All right. We'll be back. Don't let them trash your history. And I know sometimes when we talk about this and we have a huge show like this, people get anxious. I'm not trying to increase your anxiety. I'm simply trying to increase your awareness of the problem. And You don't have to conquer the world. I don't expect you to wake up tomorrow morning and do a hostile takeover of the American education system. I don't. What you do have to do, though, is make sure the people in your circle are aware of it. Talk to your kids. Talk to your friends. Talk to your family members. When it's appropriate, have discussions about it. Make sure you're individually waking people up. That can be just as, if not a lot more powerful than the culture itself. That's what you and I have to do. I have to do it more too. Got my two sons. I ask them as much as possible, what'd you learn in school today? That subject, what did you learn about that? I need to do even more of it. We'll do it together. Be good.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? My drink was give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is an iHeart podcast.